Happy Halloween, everybody. Welcome to the Metal Hammer Podcast, episode 88. I'm Mo. I'm here with Elle and Alice. I was about to try and give you Simpson Treehouse of Horror-esque nicknames, but I couldn't in time because I only thought to do it as I was doing the intro. So
Helena,
Badman, and Alice.
Malice,
yes. And Girlin. Yeah, those are proper spooky names. It's the greatest time of the year, everyone. There's fucking pumpkins everywhere. We've been eating green coloured sweets and all sorts of weird spooky shit in the office. We're going to be doing a special little horror movie segment later on in the podcast. But before that, there is plenty to get around this week. You guys went to Rotten Christ last night.
Yeah.
How the hell was that?
It was good.
Okay. Also in metal this week.
We're like weird Halloween chinks twins.
Yeah.
Just talking at the same time.
Elle and Al are both dressed in very, very nearly matching black boots, black trousers, black tops, necklaces, and their hair is a kind of similar colour. So I'm getting a bit of a weird kind of goth grown up version of the twins from The Shining vibe going on today.
Better watch out, Merlin.
Ooh.
I love Ross in Christ. I think I've said before, I'm new to Ross in Christ. I'd always kind of ignored them because I just assumed they're an extreme underground black metal band who were the kind of band that are like, oh, we're really cool. We're called Ross in Christ. We're black metal, which I now know is an ignorant view. And we did a feature.
You're ignorant.
Yeah. We did a feature on Ross in Christ and their album, The Heretics, this year. And for that feature, I obviously had to do some research for commissioning it and found out a lot more about Ross in Christ than I'd known. And obviously they're from Greece. They've been around for years, like more than 20 years.
And how was the gig, Al? That's what we want to know.
I'm just getting to that. Fine.
But we've done all that this year, haven't we?
Great. I loved it. Thought the gig was great. It was my first time seeing Ross in Christ. They were at Islington Assembly Hall and I just thought it was fantastic.
Which I've still not been to.
There. You could have come to Ross in Christ, but you didn't.
No, I didn't.
It was really good. Like, they just had kind of like a bassy, atmospheric, ambient music before they came on. And then they just came on, like strode out, did weird incantations, and then went into a couple of tracks from their album from 2015, Lucifer Over Athens. And they really just hit a groove. Like, so many of their songs are really catchy and really groovy. They played stuff from The Heretics, Fire, God and Fear. That sounded great. And it got kind of like groovier and more rhythmic as the show went on. And it kind of built up and built up and built up. And everyone was getting so into it. There was a bit where they just kind of stopped playing and were like clapping and like going, oh, oh, and like getting their arms in the air and getting people chanting. And that was a really nice thing. The fact that they are a metal band who are kind of like grandiose and do all the kind of incantations and chanting and the very kind of grand sounding metal, but they don't take themselves too seriously and they're not afraid to put on a show. They will clap, they will get the crowd involved. And by the time it got towards the end, people, like, the pit was crazy. Like, it was like they were the headliner. And also there were actually people who were literally just jumping up and down on the spot, like actually just jumping.
That's cool. Did the kind of like the atmospherics of the album, the last few albums, really come through? Because they're so
absolutely,
like,
yeah, it really got, like, there was a real vibe in the room. Like, they obviously tried to create it by putting kind of like the bassy atmospheric stuff on beforehand, but there was a really good atmosphere. Like, it was cool and they had a cool light show, which I know is a boring thing to say, but in a space like that, it's a kind of medium-sized venue, it does make a difference. And they got like a younger bassist who was like really going for it, like doing proper like rock star moves. And I think people are quite into that album from 2013, Kataton Daimona Itoi. Probably don't pronounce it like that. There are a couple of tracks from that towards the end. There was Inhuman Zibalba and Grandis Spiritus Diabolus. And literally that was when it felt like it was all kicking off. And that was towards the end. It just kind of ramped up right to Non-Servium at the end, where literally everybody lost their shit. It was like watching a headliner. They were supporting Moonspell, but yeah, it felt like they were the main act, really. Everybody was just like super hyped for it. And yeah, they just hit this atmospheric rhythmic stride where it was kind of like pounding and catchy and you couldn't help but move to it. Very danceable.
Awesome.
That's really cool. Such a great album as well, The Heretics. If for some reason you missed the podcast where we blabbed on about it before, go and check that album out. It's one of the best metal albums
what do you
of
think,
2019.
Alice? It was great. I had fun. I was dancing. I just realized that I like, went on about it and you didn't say anything about it. So
yeah, I was in the moment, man.
Are you in the moment right now?
That's awesome. I want to go see them again and again and again. I was like, why have I not gotten to this sooner? It's really good.
Yeah, fucking great. It's so cool that a band like that is getting to play like decent sized venues as well. Like you said, Al, they've been around for a while and it's just so cool to see. So shout out Rotting Christ. Shout out also to Bloodstock, who have revealed their final two headliners for next year's festival, joining a increasingly massive looking lineup. Judas Priest will be celebrating 50 years of Judas Priest at Bloodstock. So that's going to be, you'd imagine, the mother of all celebrations and one of the single greatest heavy metal bands of all time. Behemoth will also be headlining this year's festival. Hopefully Nurgle can manage to not post any stupid shit on the internet between now and playing. That'd be nice. I think we'll probably get into all that another time because life's short. But yeah, so absolutely massive looking Bloodstock lineup this year, for next year even. That takes place in August. Tickets, you can go find them. Just go Google Bloodstock, you'll go find the website to go to. Looking absolutely huge. Nightwish have also announced something massive, if I'm not mistaken, Ellie. Sorry.
Hell, it's hell today. Yeah.
Sorry, Helena.
You're going to use my Halloween name.
Helena, tell us all about Nightwish.
Nightwish. Nightwish have announced a European 2020 tour, including two UK dates. They're going to be playing the Cardiff Motorpoint Arena and London's Wembley Arena in December.
That is
so
massive.
We're on December 2020 now.
No, bands up here booking a year in advance. Jesus.
It's still Halloween.
Oh, my word. I think we got to give Nightwish some real props. We kind of said this a few times, but once again, a Finnish power metal band and now a kind of standard arena-sized band in the UK. That is fucking unbelievable.
I'd call them symphonic, but I agree with what you said.
What did I say?
Yeah.
Power metal.
Oh, yeah, of course. Symphonic metal. I don't even know why I said power metal. Absolutely symphonic
just
metal.
You love power metal. You just want to
yeah, I'm just so obsessed
time.
With power metal. Yeah, absolutely symphonic. I don't know what I was thinking. The symphonic Finns. But yeah, I kind of, I guess what I'm getting at is like a slightly nerdier, less cool, less mainstream vibe of metal is now filling arenas with regularity across Europe. Really, really cool to see and richly deserved as well. What else is going on in the world, Alice? Tell me.
Well, Ozzy Osbourne is releasing a new album in January.
That's exciting.
Sharon Osbourne.
Sharon will probably know. So I back her. What Sharon said.
He's just finished an album and the album's coming out in January. Right. He's doing good and is very excited about Take What You Want, the duet he did with Post Malone and Travis Scott. It's doing great.
Definitely not reading that for the first time whatsoever.
No.
yeah. So yeah, he did that duet with Post Malone, which is okay. I'm definitely more excited about the idea of a new Aussie record. It's been quite a while since the last one. I can't remember when the last one was, actually.
Yeah, I was nonplussed about that song, but that's cool if he enjoyed it. I don't want to take away anyone's fun and enjoyment.
Yeah, and it's, you know, nothing wrong with putting Ozzy on the radar of people who probably might not be, in many cases, as instantly familiar with him. I don't want to say all Post Malone fans don't know anything
so
about
cool
rock music.
That Ozzy is still making music and doing things.
Well, he really wants to do it. Like, know, when we cool. did the cover feature with him at the start of this year, he just kept saying over and over again he's got no intention of properly retiring. Music is what he does and he wants to keep doing it. Like, he wants to be in the studio and he wants to be able to play gigs when he can. We're waiting to hear when those long-awaited European dates with Judas Priest will get rearranged. Was it a full European or just UK? I can't remember, but he was playing with Priest anyway at some point. But yeah, new Aussie album in January, so interested to see who how that sounds, and also interested to see who's going to be playing guitar on it. Because I'm still not totally sure exactly who is in Ozzy's band these days. So
I don't know.
Zach Wilde, of course, been playing live.
Say.
Yeah, only Sharon can say. That was a bit of a baby metal Fox God
oh,
vibe
yeah,
you just
only
gave
the
it there.
Fox God knows. Sharon's Ozzy's Fox God.
So true. Yeah, don't know who's in the band. Zach Wilde was playing the live shows, but we don't really know who's going to be on the album. So that'll be an interesting reveal of sorts. So there we go. Right, should we get into Halloween mode then? Do this thing properly. Last month when we were talking about last week, someone mentioned something in the reader questions about spooky films and spooky music, I think it was. So we thought we'd set ourselves a little challenge. Not a difficult one. Well, only difficult in the sense of narrowing it down if you're a fucking horror nerd like I am and others are. We basically said we will come into this podcast with three horror movies that we would recommend to people. There's no rules to that. It doesn't have to be your favourite horror movie. It doesn't have to be what you think is, quote unquote, objectively the best horror movie or any particular theme. Totally up to you which ones you choose. Be honest, how much time did you guys spend preparing this?
Well, I actually have 13 horror movies.
Well, that's fuck loads. So
Ellen said three.
Well, I just counted
13's
them.
A good spooky number though.
I just counted them and I didn't intentionally do 13.
Okay.
I had a problem with
that's
it.
That's loads.
Because
you don't understand what horror film is.
God, this conversation we had in the office, yeah. Well, because what was the film? Because we've been talking about it in the office a bit, and Elle keeps on going. What did you say? You were like, you couldn't believe The Exorcist was a horror movie.
No, I don't know. I just, basically.
You said that, right? You were like, is The Exorcist a horror film?
You were saying that we needed to think of three horror films to talk about on the podcast. And I was like, and you were making fun of me and being like, oh, can you think of three? Because you don't know any horror films. And I was like, well.
Which you said, to be fair. I wasn't being shitty. That was something you had suggested previously.
I did say that, and I was thinking I'm not really sure what I'd say. And then someone mentioned a couple of films that I've seen that I really like, and I'm like, hang on a minute, I didn't know these were horror films. So then I googled like top horror films and got onto like some lists of horror films, and there are a bunch of films showing up that I love, and I didn't know they were classed as horror films.
Such as?
Queen of the Damned.
Yeah, absolutely a horror film. It's literally a film about a queen of vampires.
But I thought that was just a film with some vampires in.
But what?
That's what makes it a horror movie.
That's like saying Dracula is a film about vampires.
Yeah, it is. It's a film.
It's a drama. It's a drama about a vampire.
Yeah, I didn't know that it was a horror film.
But that's like saying Dracula is not a horror novel.
But I didn't know that you could have those things. I thought they were just vampire films or vampire novels. I didn't know they were horror.
So what do you think a horror movie is? If someone said describe a horror movie.
Well, I do broadly know what horror movies are because I used to work for another magazine called Bazaar, which had a lot of horror stuff in it. So I kind of know what horror films are, but in my mind it was more something that's a bit stabby and like serial killery.
So you think slasher films is what you're getting at?
I guess.
Jason Voorhees, Freddy Krueger.
Yeah, they're the ones I've not seen.
Oh, Ghostface, those lads.
I've seen Halloween.
Yeah, Halloween, absolutely.
But I haven't seen A Nightmare on Elm Street.
So you haven't seen a lot of those kind of famous like box office franchise horror anthologies?
No, and I wouldn't mind watching them, but I'm really impressionable, and if I watch stuff on my own, I go to bed and have nightmares about it.
I thought you were saying you're gonna go start like stabbing people up. I was like, please don't.
I think you'd probably have a problem with me coming to the office if that was the case.
I mean, horror movies are to me anything that sets a certain tone within the film. So one of the films I've picked, you could debate whether it counts as a horror film, but I think it absolutely does count as a horror film because of the tone it has, the atmosphere it has, but the emotions it stirs in you.
Everyone started.
There are different types of horror though. There's like gothic horror, there's supernatural horror, there's slasher films.
Like objectively, I know this. But when people were naming films in the office, I was like, I didn't.
It's when you questioned The Exorcist being a horror film that I really got worried. I was like, that's the most infamous horror film ever made.
I mean, that was a joke.
It was not a joke.
It was a joke.
Don't you backtrack on me.
It was a joke.
No.
It was a joke.
You're backtracking.
It was a joke.
No.
I know that's a horror film.
I'm not having this. That you are not joking when we had this conversation yesterday.
I was.
No. Oh, fine. Whatever.
But yeah, it's not
anyway,
really,
the point
it's not
is,
really a horror film is it? It's just a little girl that throws up.
Yeah, you're
that's
right.
Exactly what happens.
It's just basically a film about babies.
It's a little child who's ill and is sick.
And her head spins around, and she walks backwards down the stairs, and she masturbates with a cross and speaks in tongues and swears like a horrible demon at a priest.
She's not very well.
It's one of the most infamous horror movies ever. But anyway, the good thing about all this is that you realised that you had seen loads of horror movies.
Yeah.
So actually, you were being hard on yourself as a connoisseur
of
horror.
Yeah, I just didn't know that all these films are horror films, so I have.
Hooray.
Who's going to start us off?
So, Alice, do you want to start us off? I know you got 13, but do you want to go in on... Do you want to give a bit more detail on three of the ones and then...
No, I don't know which ones.
Well, you know what? Actually, I don't think you can name... I'll tell you what. Do three. And then if me and Elle don't name any of your others, you can just quickly reel off the rest at the end. Does that sound fair? Because okay. If you've done 13, there's a better chance you've just covered our ones, which would be a bit crap.
I don't know. I tried to do obscure ones.
Probably not. There's a lot of horror movies, but... Yeah. I did a list the other day of every horror, my favourite horror movie from every year since I've been alive.
And there's even more horror films than I could ever have dreamed of.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, 32 in that list, but just for each year. Anyway, so what three are you going to pick?
Okay, well, I'm going to start with Stakeland. Have either of you seen that?
No, I've not seen
Stakeland.
It.
Stakeland.
Is that about like vampires, per chance?
It is about vampires, actually.
Which are horror icons.
I just like vampires, so I didn't realise.
These vampires are particularly nasty. And it's a post-apocalyptic film where basically the whole of the world has been ravaged by vampires. And they're really, really scary and horrible. And it's really bleak, basically. So it's kind of like a post-apocalyptic thing going on, kind of zombie-esque.
Is it quite low budget, or is it... Because I've not heard of this, which is...
It's not massively low budget. It's got a couple of people that you might recognise in it.
Oh, hold on a minute. I've seen this. Just looked up the poster. I have seen this.
And it's really like... It reminds me of one of my favourite books of all time, which is I Am Legend by Richard Matheson.
Great book. Butchered by that film starring Will Smith.
Yeah, but there's been so many... I did a whole essay when I was in uni on it and how it inspired the zombie genre. And I just really liked how it kind of like brought it back around because it has that very similar vibe. There's like Mister, who is very similar to the lead character in I Am Legend. He's quite... Well, in the book anyway, he's like a military man. He's very like... cold and just sort of like gets the job done kind of guy. And then you've got the vampires are sort of like very zombie-ish, and the vampires from I Am Legend inspired George Romero and his approach to like zombie films. So I just thought it was really cool because it really reminded me of that book, and it was kind of like linking it all back. And it's just a really, really bleak, horrible film as well. And it's kind of got that sort of Walking Dead aspect to it where actually the humans are worse than the vampires. As well.
Yeah, so that's a big recurring theme in a lot of zombie films. Or then like you said, it's a vampire film.
So it's like, it is really, really brutal. And it's a really, really bleak, horrible, horrible film. but it's really, really good. So I would definitely recommend it. I think they made a second one, which I think I've watched, but I don't think it was as good. Okay. So I would definitely recommend Stakeland, though. Right.
Nice. Good first shout. I can't remember much about it, to be honest, but I do remember seeing it now that I've seen that dude that looks like Mad Max.
Yeah. I think he's in the second one. I can't remember. I know the boy is in the second one, but I don't remember the second one quite as much.
What's your second film?
I'm going to just pick one off the 13 films that I have written down here. Is this really hard? Okay, I'm going to pick American Mary.
Oh, cool. I've seen that with the actress from Ginger Snatch. Yeah, that's a wicked film.
So it's more of like a body horror, which was a really big thing in the 1980s. And it's kind of all about the dangers of body modification. And she's like a student, a medical student who needs to pay her bills because she lives in America and she has no tax and stuff like that. And she goes to get a job in a strip club, I think just to work at the bar. And then she bumps into... I haven't seen this film for ages, like years. But I think she like bumps into someone that needs something done, like... So she's like a doctor, surgical student, so she can do certain things, but obviously she's still learning. And they desperately need something done. I can't remember what it is. But she was like, oh, okay, I'll do it, because it's all like illegal. People that don't have any money and stuff like that, and they're desperate for someone to do whatever surgical shit on them. And so she kind of steps up, and then she realizes this is a really, really lucrative business to do this, like, under the radar, do things that maybe reputable surgeons won't do. So it's really dark, and it's just a really kind of fucked up film, but it's really good.
Excellent then choice.
The next one, because I want to sort of choose ones that are sort of different, very different categories of horror, I suppose.
Yeah.
The next one I'm going to pick is...
I'm gagging to see the whole list now.
I'm like between two, and I don't know.
Pick the one lowest down your list.
Lowest?
Yeah, out of the two.
The list is like really not in a line. Okay, I'm going to pick Nightbreed.
Oh, yes! What a shout. I was thinking about picking that as well.
And that's because I love Clive Barker. Yeah. And I just love this sort of like weird world that he's created in Nightbreed. Yeah, with all these different weird monsters, and all the special effects are amazing because it's all like practical effects, and they have these cool costumes on. Well, they're like monstery things. They have like prosthetics and stuff, and I just love it. It's really cool. It's this weird sort of like army of freaks that aren't actually as scary as they seem.
Yeah, it's once again kind of inverting that idea of like what evil looks like and all that kind of stuff. Really, really cool. Banging choice. Love it. Yeah, I've got something Clive Barker related for mine. L. Fascinated to know your picks.
Okay.
Now that you know you've seen more than two horror films.
Yeah, I've seen loads. So then after we were talking about The Queen of the Damned, I picked Queen of the Damned. It's like my go-to comfort film if I'm ever ill or like tired or sad, because it's just like a total new metal vampire film. So obviously it came out just at the turn of the millennium, 2002, and the soundtrack was written by Jonathan Davis, and a film composer.
Literally one of the coolest metal soundtracks ever.
It's amazing. I love it so much. And then obviously he wrote and performed the songs, but then because of rights reasons, he couldn't be on the soundtracks, and the soundtracks just got like all these different metal singers on it instead. Like
the Marilyn Manson version of Redeemer is probably the one song I would like to get on Spotify.
So good. I really wish the soundtrack was on Spotify, but it's not, because I've looked before. Yeah. Just like when I'm wanting to just plug in and listen to it, because it's so good. But yeah, it's David Draiman, like Wayne Static, Chester Bennington, Marilyn Manson, Jay from Orgy. It's just super new metal. So obviously it was Aaliyah's final film as well. She was the vampire. He was like the most ancient vampire, called Akasha. And then the main character was Lestat, the vampire, who was woken up from his sleep by a band and then became the frontman of the band. And obviously based on the Anne Rice books as well, which I was obsessed with as a teenager. They're all like different vampire books based on like New Orleans, where she wrote, and they've just got like... It's just kind of, yeah, gothic vampire-y books, which when you're a gothic vampire-y teenager, are like catnip.
It's definitely kind of trashy teen film.
It is. it's objectively an awful film, I'm not going to lie. But I just really love it, like when he's playing the festivals and they've just got all the new metal, and it's great. New metal vampire film is for me.
Yeah.
Then I picked a film I studied at uni and got really obsessed with, which is from 1920, German expressionist film, The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari. This film just plays on all the things I love that aren't new metal and vampires. It's about a guy who comes to a weird town, and he's like a weird old bearded guy, and he comes to like the town, and he wants to be at the town fair and like exhibit, and he exhibits a somnambulist, which is like a sleeping man called Cesare, and all the townsfolk like come and see him, and it's like, come and see the incredible somnambulist Cesare. But he's also a killer, I believe. It's been a couple of years since I've watched it, but it's really good. And the thing that we studied at uni was like how it was an example of German Expressionism, and it was all, the way it was set up was to make you feel deliberately uncomfortable. So like when the old man goes to the town hall to ask if he can exhibit at the fair, like all the town officials are sitting on really high stools that are too high for them, and there's bits where Cesare the somnambulist is like going down the stairs, and like the stairs are a weird height, and he's sort of doing this weird like arm movements, and everything in the film is a bit wrong, like everything's at a wrong angle, or it's like it's really angular, things don't quite fit, it's all black and white, it's all shadows, it's all creepy. And I just really love it because it's just weird. And it's got this like creepy old soundtrack as well. And it's cool. I just love it for its weirdness, basically. And as soon as I saw it, I was like, this is amazing.
Nice. Yeah. Dig it.
And then I picked The Eye.
Oh, fuck.
Because
I hate Japanese version or the American version?
It's Hong Kong / Singapore.
Oh, okay.
The original version.
Well,
bully me for not knowing what I was talking
about. And again, this was something I saw at university, actually. I was part of the film unit, which was the student cinema. Shout out Sheffield. And it was like, we used to have a program of films on every week. And I remember just going along to watch The Eye and not knowing what it was. And then just being totally horrified because there's this horrible scene where in a lift, which I'm not going to ruin if you watch it. And I was like, what the fuck? And the plot is basically that there's a violinist and she has a cornea transplant, and after she has it, she starts seeing horrible premonitions of people dying, and she's obviously very distressed about this. So her and her psychotherapist go to Thailand to find like what happened to the eye donor, and it turns out the eye donor could see premonitions and took her own life. And so it's this whole story about like the things that she sees and like being distressed that she has these visions. And it's just a really genuinely scary film. I'm obviously very easily scared, but yeah, I just remember sitting in the cinema and watching it and being like, this is horrifying. And then obviously going home and having nightmares because that's how my brain works.
Oh no.
That's why I need a horror buddy.
Horror buddies.
I need someone who'll watch with me.
I'll watch anything.
Well, we can be horror buddies then.
Hooray. Yeah. Excellent choices and quite wide ranging as well.
Yeah.
Smashing it, lads. I wasn't sure what to pick really, so I kind of went for ones that I thought maybe might have slid under a few people's radars. I think it's especially hard picking stuff. I've just realised that all my choices are from the 21st century, which is quite cool. But I think it's really hard to pick stuff even just from the last few years, because I think horror is an amazing place at the moment. I was saying it to my mate the other day, like, it feels like whether it's exciting, original creations like Get Out and Us and Hereditary, or it's like big remakes or sequels or whatever, like horror's in a really good place. So I didn't know what to pick. But yeah, I just picked a few from that I thought might have not, like, you know, a few people might have missed over the last couple of decades or so. So the first film that came to mind was a film called Kill List, which is from 2011. And it's a British film, and it could probably be described as a thriller for most of it, but I think it definitely comes under horror overall, because the tone of it is just so bleak, so horrific in the literal sense of the word. It's intensely violent at points, and there's just this horribly foreboding, nasty undertone just hanging under it the whole time. It's a film that just makes you feel utterly horrible, all the best horror movies should. So it's about a soldier who has recently returned from duty, and he joins his former comrade in becoming a contract killer. So basically like a hitman. I'm not quite sure what the difference is. I think there's a slight difference between the two, but it's a contract killer. And it stars Neil Maskell, who was in The Football Factory. And did either of you guys ever see that Channel 4 series on a few years ago called Utopia?
No.
It was like a weird dystopian kind of mystery series. It was really fucking strange.
Totally missed that.
Oh, okay. Mm. Well, he was in that. And Michael Smiley, who's a Northern Irish actor, he played the bike guy in Spaced. I don't know if you remember that. But anyway.
Yeah, obviously.
So Neil Maskell and Michael Smiley are in it. They play the two soldiers. Neil Maskell's kind of the main character. He's the one who's returned from duty and is kind of looking for stuff to do, and he ends up becoming a contract killer with his mate. And the film basically focuses on them making their way through a list of targets provided to them by a client. And as they go further along the line of targets, kind of offing people, things just begin to get nastier and nastier and bleaker and bleaker. And there's this weird kind of sinister... I'm trying not to spoil it because the film... There's this kind of like small little signs hinted at across the film when you watch it back that you can kind of see there's this other completely different side to it that's totally at odds with the kind of quite gritty realism of what the film is about. But you don't really spot it at first, and then it kind of emerges more and more and more. There's this kind of weird, almost conspiracy subplot going on. It's really hard to explain what without spoiling it. But basically, it what starts off as a kind of almost slightly gangster-esque, like horribly violent thriller film descends into full-on horror come the end, and it just goes totally off the rails. And it's just nasty. It's deeply affecting, really unsettling. It's going to make you feel like shit, so definitely go and like have a nice big tub of ice cream in the fridge or something for afterwards to make yourself feel better.
I think I need more than one horror buddy for that.
Yeah, it's bad. Me and my mate went to see it, and he's not as into horror, and I'm really into my horror, and we both still came out of it being like, oh, it's horrible. Let's go for a pint. Yeah, so really nasty, but fucking great. And as I say, the twist it kind of takes at the end in terms of tone is really cool, and put it onto a whole different level for me. The next one I decided to pick out was one I kind of feel like more people will have seen, but I've just been thinking about it a lot recently because I went to see Zombieland the other day.
Have you guys? Zombieland.
It is, and that would be another pick, but it was a massive Hollywood film, so that was a bit different. Have you guys seen Wreck?
No. Yes. Oh, hang on. I remember when that came out because, again, I was working at Bizarre Magazine and we did a big thing on it, but I never watched it.
So, yeah, I don't know what it was, whether I just wasn't. It wasn't really on my radar until a few years after it came out, basically. Again, I remember seeing like the DVD cover in movie magazines and stuff. So I recognized it, but it wasn't just on my radar properly until probably about 5 or 6 years ago. I watched it for the first time. So you guys have seen it or know about it, but it's, for those that haven't seen it, it's a Spanish found footage horror. So when I say found footage, for people that don't know what that is, it's kind of things like Blair Witch Project, Paranormal Activity. It's all filmed as if it's from the perspective of someone literally holding a little handy cam or something similar and running about with it. And it is Spanish language and subtitled. So unless you do know Spanish, definitely watch it when you're, engaged and paying attention, because otherwise you might miss key plot points and all that kind of stuff. But it's fucking awesome. It's probably the best zombie movie I've ever seen. Were you saying the other day that you're sick of zombie movies, Alice?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it like... Zombie films are a hard thing to kind of reimagine and make fresh. 28 Days Later did it. Zombieland did it. I think Wreck did it as well. Yeah. It's basically about a news crew that becomes stuck, a television news crew that becomes stuck inside an apartment complex at the very start of a zombie outbreak. So it kind of sounds a bit predictable from that perspective, but the whole found footage aspect of it really, really works and really takes it into a whole different dimension. There's a couple of jump scares in there. And it gets very in your face at some points, but it's more about this kind of slow building sense of just terror as they kind of realize what's happening and more people start to fall victim to this thing and they're all trapped and it's just horrible, horrible, horrible. It's really claustrophobic. The way the plot unfolds is really clever. The climax of the film is one of the best horror climax I've ever seen. And the reveal at the end of where the kind of... like the source of it all comes from. And again, the slight shift in things, isn't it? Because with zombie films, it's normally like, oh, it's like an infected strain. It's an outbreak of a disease or something like that. But the way they slightly shift the goalposts on where it's come from is so fucking cool. And to me, it made the film even scarier and more horrible. I loved it. So you really feel the sense of what it's like to be caught in the middle of this horrifying event. It's so great. Again, not the most... unheard of film on the list, but if for some reason you haven't seen it, like, for fuck's sake, go out and see it. It's absolutely awesome. It's my favorite found footage film, and it's my favorite zombie film, I think. My last one is probably the hardest sell because it's a proper like franchise sequel one that's not very cool or probably as critically acclaimed, although I think it did all right, but it was a straight to DVD film, put it that way. Hellraiser Inferno, which is the fourth sequel in the Hellraiser series.
Really?
Yes, really. Hear me out. So by this point, for those who haven't watched Hellraiser,
It's basically the general premise of the series is people who are seeking out this weird pain pleasure dynamic seek out this thing called the Lament configuration, which is this puzzle box that you might have seen if you're familiar with horror iconography. And you play around with the box, and then it unlocks this portal to hell where these horrible things called the Cenobites, led by Pinhead, who's of course very iconic, drag you into hell and do all sorts of unspeakable things to you. So by the time it gets to Hellraiser 5, Pinhead and his mates have kind of taken over a big American city. They go to space in part 4. That was a thing that actually happened.
That's interesting.
And for what it's worth, I quite like that one too. For me, if you're looking at kind of cheesy, often naff horror franchises that are quite good to start with and just go totally off the rails, Hellraiser is probably my favourite. I think there's a lot of good shit right the way through most of those first 6 or 7 films. But Hellraiser 5, I think, is genuinely good. And a lot of people probably won't realise that the film was actually directed by Scott Derrickson, who went on to be a big-name horror director with films like Sinister and The Exorcism of Emily Rose. Do you remember the day that the Earth Stood Still remake with Keanu Reeves playing a robot?
No.
Or something like that, or an alien? Well, it was kind of quite big box office, but I don't know how well it did. But he did that as well. And he did Doctor Strange in the MCU recently, and he's doing the sequel to that as well. So he's gone on to very big things since then. And I think this was actually his first kind of feature film he directed. But it's a really, really unique Hellraiser movie, because instead of being kind of going on the usual tones of someone looking for, you know, a thrill or finding a box and unlocking it in it, whatever, blah, blah, blah. It's got a bit of that in it, but the kind of main basis of the film is almost like this slightly surrealist murder mystery. So in the plot, the protagonist is a slightly bent but generally well-meaning detective who's on the case of a serial killer. And so he's a bit morally not all there, but he's, you know, generally an all right guy. And he's hunting a serial killer who's been, like, offing people and sending him little things in the mail and all that kind of stuff. Classic serial killer shit. And basically, as he gets closer to the murderer, the roles of the Cenobites and Pinhead in the whole ordeal begin to become clear. So it's almost kind of like the Hellraiser aspect of this film is this weird side thing. It's not really the main point of the film. It's a really weird way of doing it. And instead of being this kind of literal, kind of labyrinthy kind of hell, it's the idea about personal hell and how the concept of hell on earth can differ for different people. So there's a bit of a philosophical slant to it. The tone of the film is totally different to any other Hellraiser film out there. I'd probably say it's different to any other, like, horror franchise film out there, because it's just, like I said, it's not even really a proper Hellraiser film. It's almost like a gritty, gory detective movie that happens to have Hellraiser stuff in it. But it's really full of imagination. It's full of really cool twists, really good performances, some great monsters, I guess you'd call them, in there. And it's just a totally different pace to most franchise horror sequels. So on the off chance you fancy checking out the fifth entry to a horror series, I would definitely go for Hellraiser Inferno, because it's really not, like, talked about as a great horror movie, but I genuinely think it's really good. And the fact that Scott Derrickson did it shows that it was handled by someone who knows his shit, because, as I said, he's become a very significant horror movie director since then.
I have a question about horror movies.
So, go on.
Mm-hmm. Is Snakes on a Plane a horror movie?
No.
No. No. Well. It's a thriller. It's an action thriller.
Okay.
I can't remember it. Is it not very gory?
It's
or
also
anything?
Silly.
Yeah.
Yeah. No horror film's ever silly.
Yeah, but it's just like the whole thing
I don't think it was really marketed as a horror film
at
all.
It's not horror, no.
But Anaconda is a kind of horror film. Just a terribly shit one. A terribly shit one. What are the rest of your choices then, Alice? Rattle through them.
See, like,
because I think had one I was going to do, but then didn't because you had it.
Yeah, The Witch.
The Witch. Watch The Fucking Witch. If you don't watch anything else from any of these lists, watch The Witch.
Black Phillip.
The best horror movie of the last 20 years, in my opinion. It's unbelievable.
So good. Yeah, I, like, had a total mind blank the other day when I was trying to write it down, because, like, I watch so many horror films that, like, I've probably seen more horror films than any other type of film. But I just, definitely it's have, kind yeah. of just, like, I can't, you know, when someone, like, asks you, what's your favourite band? And you're like, I don't remember any bands.
But it's horror like movies that. Are so easy to rattle off if you're a fan, because there's so many of them. And, like, even if they're a bit shit and schlocky and cheesy,
yeah,
like, there's still a
like,
good laugh to
did
put
I
on.
Like that one?
Let's hear the list.
Okay, so I've got some others that I just thought, you know, about what I should recommend for Halloween kind of thing.
Okay.
So I've written down The Witch and The Craft as well.
Oh, The Craft.
Classic. And The Love Witch as well.
Oh, people keep telling me to watch The Love Witch, and I still haven't seen it.
I love that film. It's like my two favorite things in the world, like witches and like 60s psychedelic.
Okay.
It's just like, it's made like a 1960s/70s, like super, you know, when, what's it called? It's called a certain thing, Technicolor, that's it. Like when they went to Technicolor. So they've made it like really, really like bright colored, and it just, it feels like you're watching a 1960s or 1970s TV show or whatever, like I used to when I was a kid. It's just really bizarre, but it's like set now.
We should have said Alice is 58.
No, I grew up on like old stuff. Like all the 1960s stuff repeated, and my mum used to just like watch it all.
It sounds like a film Tobias Forge would be in on.
I was just thinking of that because, yeah, Ghosts have gone all 60s recently, haven't they? What else
it's
is on your
really
list?
It's really cool. Anyway, basically, I just think everyone should watch it. Also on my list is Night of the Comet, which is a really good New Year's movie, actually, like New Year horror. So, you know, if you want horrors for all your holidays, this
I haven't seen that. I feel like I might have heard about it, though.
It's like this weird kind of zombie-ish film where, like, this comet comes over and, like, just wipes out majority of the, like, at least the adults.
Oh, sad.
They just disappear. They literally just disappear. And then there's kind of, like, these things. I think there's, like, these zombies. This bizarre 1980s thing.
Nice.
And it's just funny and great.
Is Logan's Run a horror film?
No.
Fine.
That's science fiction.
What about that robot called Box who comes and chases them?
I mean, there are thrilling aspects, but it's still a sci-fi, not a horror.
I've always maintained that The Terminator should be considered a sci-fi horror film.
I don't know. I don't find it very horror.
But the soundtrack is very sci-fi. But if you think about it, if you take The Terminator out and replace everything in that film, but it's a guy with an axe doing it, it's a horror movie.
Yeah, but it's more complex than that.
It totally is, which is why it's not an out and out. But I think I think it should be at least kind of like,
because then you could loads 21% of thrillers about like a serial killer, like any thriller about a serial killer, you could say is a horror, but it's actually
that's a really
a thriller.
Good point. But I think the Terminator's really got that kind of like, no, please, like backing up while it's going dan 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 dan. You know.
Except,
yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I don't feel like it's quite as like. It's not quite the same.
I want it to be recognised as 21.3% horror movie and the rest can be sci-fi. Anyway, what else
obviously
you got?
Obviously, there are crossovers.
You've only done about four of them. Got
okay,
about 25 more.
So I put It Follows as well.
Okay, cool.
Which was really just weird. Like,
I wasn't quite as big on that one.
No, I just found it quite freaky though. Like, it was just kind of like,
have you heard of
there's
it?
There's something really uneasy.
What happens in it?
It's basically what happens if you get an STD. What the film is, isn't it?
It's like a demonic STD.
Yeah.
Okay.
But not in the sense
but
that, like,
you have
oh
to
no,
pass
like,
it on. It's
my
like,
balls are falling
it's,
off. It's
yeah,
like
no,
a ghost
it's like,
thing.
It's like you get an STD and you have to pass it on as quickly as possible because otherwise you're dead.
Okay.
Like, it's like The Ring meets an STD.
Yeah. Oh, no. Yeah.
That kind of thing.
That sounds scary.
It's not like you've got a plague. It's like there's a spooky thing that's.
But you're also stuck
you.
With it for life as well. So if that thing goes through all the rest of the people that you passed it on to, then you're next again. Yeah. It's like, no, you can never get rid of it. It's horrible.
It's quite a horrible idea. I just when they trap it in the pool and stuff, I was a bit like, isn't it stupid?
Yeah, I don't know. It's yeah, not,
I don't want to ruin it because some people
good,
do like
it's
it.
Good. I liked it. Pet Sematary. It's a classic.
Oh, very good. Did you know?
Oh, I should have picked.
Do you know who the neighbour in that is?
The neighbour?
Yeah. A guy who talks like this. Herman Munster.
Oh!
Right?
I can't even remember him right now.
As soon as you watch that film again, he's the really tall, lanky
guy
with the grey hair, the older guy.
Yeah,
the guy who John Lithgow plays in the remake.
I haven't seen the remake.
Oh, okay. It's not that great.
I didn't want to see
it. The original's better, and I thought the original was imperfect.
Yeah. There's so many around that time, like Poltergeist is another one. Amityville Horror, just shoving them in
Poltergeist
there.
Poltergeist is another one where by the time I finally watched it, I didn't rate it that much.
Oh, I love it.
It's too Spielberg-y for me to be a proper scary horror film. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's got its touches all over it. It feels kind of like, ooh, a bit spooky and magical this.
The, like, the background behind it is quite weird as well, though. All the, like, things that happened and how it was cursed and how, like, the one of the skeletons in one of the scenes where she falls into that pit of mud and there's all these skeletons.
Yeah,
it's actually
stuff.
Real skeleton. It's a real skeleton
or
something.
Yeah, I heard about
and
that.
It all, and, like, people died that were... It's really freaky.
Sometimes fact is stranger than fiction.
Yes, it's true. Okay, so the rest of my list.
No worries.
Black Christmas.
Yes,
so
classic.
That's one of my favourite ever slasher films.
And works as a lovely family Christmas movie as well.
Yes, exactly. So that one's your Christmas one. Then you've got Night of the Demon.
That's one I've not seen, but I've heard about.
Oh, wait. Yeah, so I've said Night of the Comet. I got really confused with myself then. So Night of the Comet is the one that you should watch for New Year's. But Night of the Demon is like a classic 1950s weird film. And it's kind of like got folk sort of tale aspects in it. It's just like classic old school horror, kind of like noir filmish in a way. I don't know. It's just kind of weird and really old and I really enjoy it. And it's got that famous quote, "It's in the trees, it's coming," which Kate Bush took for her Hounds of Love.
Could I have Invasion of the Body Snatchers?
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good choice.
And then I've also got Rosemary's Baby because it's one of my favourites ever. And it's really off-putting and I just love anything satanic.
Like, incredibly satanic for when it was made as well.
It was all like part of the like whole satanic shit
satanic
that was
panic.
Going on. Yeah, and like the early, there's so many 60s films, it's just like all Satan, yeah. Everything Satan. And then Donnie Darko, because it's a really good
hang on.
Ooh, horror film.
Is that a horror film? Because that's one of my favourite films of all time.
I'd debate that.
Can I have that?
I think it's a horror sci-fi.
It. I think that's probably one of the films I've seen most in my whole life. I've just seen it.
Interesting.
Over and over
Donnie
and over
Darko.
Again. Love it.
It's really funny because I think people around our age have all seen that film, but there probably are a lot of people either side of that probably haven't heard of it because it was a massive deal to a certain audience, but it wasn't like as much of a mega breakthrough thing.
Yeah.
And
no, I mean,
the director's commentary.
It's really an easy film and it's like, it's got loads of horror aspects in it and it's set at Halloween, but it's also a sci-fi. But what, it actually really freaked me out when I first watched it because I couldn't figure out what I just watched and I couldn't sleep because I was literally, it was going round and round and round and round in my head. Like, I can't figure out what was going on. Like, I was just trying to figure it out and like, who the hell was Frank? And then I think I knew who Frank was, but then I was confused and then I eventually like figured out what the whole film was about.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. That's really interesting. Yeah, I would never have put that as a horror movie, but I can see...
It like plays on your mind and loads
of people
are actually
of things
afraid
in there,
of Frank as well.
Yeah.
Well, you would be. Giant weird looking fucking bunnies hanging out.
Yeah.
Excellent choices, guys. We've sewn up, so between us, yeah, that's like over 20 horror movies you can go and watch, I think. Mm-hmm. So well done, everybody. Well done indeed. Should we do some questions?
Okay.
Andy Poole, I almost forgot to say, facebook.com/ Matt Hummer Readers, if you want to come and ask some questions and hang out with us. Andy Poole says, "Hey Mel, Elle and Alice. Hi. With Finn and Selma doing a vulgar display set at Bloodstock, we went into Phil last week. What band or artist would you like to see do a full album set? What band, what album, and why would you like to see it?" Says Andy Poole. Have you got any full albums you'd like to see performed?
I chose Typo Negative and October Rust because next year is the 10th anniversary of Peter Steele's death. And I just really like the album October Rust.
Who on earth would you get to sing, though?
I actually hadn't even thought of that, which is the main question.
quite an important aspect.
I don't know why I completely blanked on it. I just thought... Silver Tomb, the band that
could do a job
that's
there.
Got guitarist Kenny Hickey and drummer Johnny Kelly, and they could easily play Bloodstock. And then the keyboardist Josh Silver, he's an EMT now, so he could, I don't know, take a week off. Who could sing? I literally
just trying to think of obvious goth names. Avila Vallo came to mind.
That question. I just thought my mind just went. I'd like to hear that album.
Avila Vallo, Matey Boy from Fields of the Nephilim, maybe. Just thinking people with like deep goth
deep
voices.
Danzig,
Carl McCoy.
Or it could be
Danzig would be a shout if he could. He's a bit on and off live, isn't he, Danzig?
Or it could be one of those where they have a few people singing, which obviously would be really difficult to organise. But yeah, if you had like Vila and Danzig and Carl, like, all doing different songs or something.
Yeah, that could
be really cool.
I would go and see that, and I'm not even a massive Typo nerd like you.
Thanks.
No worries. I know, you said the Motley Crue were better.
Oh, there was an office debate. I don't know why.
I didn't say they were better. I said I like and listen to Motley Crue more than Typo Negative. I don't think they're better. I fully recognise Typo Negative being a massive important band.
From classic rock was, which is better, Motley Crue or Typo Negative?
Yeah.
Me and Alice immediately jumped on Typo Negative, and some heathens said Motley Crue,
including me.
Yeah. There you go.
Someone do the next question before Elle throws a microphone at me. We haven't done our other thing. Sorry.
What's wrong with you?
I got intimidated. I wrote down a few. I put down In Flames, basically any album pre the last. But any album pre and including Come Clarity, I'd probably take Soundtrack to Your Escape off that. But pretty much any out, like Lunar Strain, Horacle, Colony, Jester Race. God.
I always thought it was Horacle.
Horacle.
I don't know.
Horacle.
Is it like
Horacle? Oh, fuck yeah. I don't know if I've ever said that out loud before. That's weird. Anyway, all of them. Come Clarity, definitely. Reroute to Remain. I'd love to see them do any of those. And definitely not anything they've done recently.
And they'd have to have those screens where they flash up the lyrics so we could sing along.
It's not a Disney club.
That's what they did last time I saw them.
Don't you know the lyrics?
Well, In Flames did.
Not last time I saw them, sorry. I saw them in like 2006 or 2007. And they had screens behind them, and it flashed up all the lyrics you could sing along.
Every
song.
It
was really fun. For a lot of the songs.
I don't remember that. Interesting. I've also got Killswitch Engage, Alive or Just Breathing, which has been on my list for years. But to be fair, I think I have, since Jesse came back. Well, I mean, I saw most of that album performed the first time I saw them with Howard. So it's mainly just getting Jesse to see them. But even he's dropped quite a few of those tracks in the last few years. So I think I've seen most of that now. AFI on any album out of Sing the Sorrow, Art of Drowning, and Black Sails. I'd love to see one of those albums done in full. And I feel like I've said this before, but Metallica, some kind of mix or either or of Load, Reload, and Garage Inc.
I would really love to see Alice in Chains doing Dirt, but you'd probably have a strong opinion on that, Alice, because William would obviously
I want to see them do Facelift, but only if Lane was still with her.
Oh, well, you can't do that.
No, I didn't even think about this, but off the top of my head, I'd want to see Ugly Kid Joe, because I love them.
What's
wrong with you?
Yeah.
I did not expect
any
that.
Album that you want.
I did
but
not
it's such that. A banger. It's America's Least Wanted, and I know all the lyrics, and I just love them. And
that
it's
was
so
an
fun, okay? And I would sing every
swerve.
Single lyric. And my other one would be Dark Throne in a Blaze in the Northern Sky. And why? Because they never tour, and they never play live.
Wow. See, I would have thought you might go for one of them. That was a
but also Ugly Kid Joe.
Goodness.
Out of every artist that you could pick,
I've seen loads of them
do
full albums before, and like they were great, but you know, that one would be a real sing-along for me. Okay.
Someone do the next question.
Matt Grimster asks, what surprises do you think Judas Priest could have in store for their 50th anniversary set at Bloodstock?
This is interesting because I was not at Bloodstock on the night they played a couple of years. Well, it was last year, I think, wasn't it? But they didn't really do like a proper kind of standard heavy greatest hits set. They played like a couple of deeper cuts and all the rest of it. So it'll be interesting to see if they do like a deeper cut set and play around a little bit, or if they're just like 50 years heavy metal, Judas Priest, here are the ultimate greatest hits of Judas Priest, which I think is probably more likely.
Do you think they'll bring back any old members to guest?
That would be cool. Yeah, I guess that's what's like good. I didn't
KK
even think about that, actually.
Whatever, like, he left in 2011.
Yeah, KK. We did a little something with Rob Halford, which we have coming up, where he actually talks about whether he would cover the Tim Ripper Owens era of the band. That's quite interesting, whether they would wheel out some of those songs. I think that would please quite a lot of people as well, because those albums are very underrated. So there we go. We won't know until we see it, put it that way. Do you want to do the next one, Alice?
Okay, so Rob Lake asks, how can I get my local pub to play metal rather than Northern Soul? Asking for a friend, he's starting to like it, and am I not a frequent question asker yet?
Is he? I guess so.
I don't know.
We appreciate people that constantly ask us questions on the podcast, so don't stop, keep it up. I would say smash the jukebox up and then just put up a boombox and just blare some Slayer. And then they got no choice. What are they going to do? Kick you out?
I was going to go with
for vandalising their property and breaking the law.
I was going to go with the opposite and like subtly sneak in like a track a night until you work up to a full album. But I was trying to think what artist would be one that you could sort of gently introduce, because you couldn't go full Slayer.
Where could you go?
Work up to it.
I just think you should just get together a giant band of metalheads and take over the pub like often most days until they realize that their demographic has changed, yeah. And then they'll be like, oh well, everyone here is hating the music, so here's some metal.
That's like a good idea.
I like it. Good idea. I would back that. But now Judas Priest question from at rockandrun85. What are Judas Priest doing not touring the UK on the back of their best album in years, Firepower? It sucks, major metal dick.
Your face when you had to read.
Yeah, I chopped that bit off, actually. No pun intended.
Oh, yeah, I didn't do that.
Nothing wrong with sucking dick, if that's what you want to do.
No, chopping it off.
No, I was talking to Rock and Run 85, not you.
Oh, I thought you were talking about chopping it off.
No, good God, no. Let's go down a weird tangent already. Let's back it up. Well, they were going to tour with Ozzy, but Ozzy hasn't been able to tour. And I can imagine that if you've got big touring plans based around probably the 2 years or so after your album comes out, which is what most bands do, and a big part of that suddenly falls through, it probably is quite hard to, you know, rearrange that or try and do something different. I don't know if Priest considered just doing some other dates by themselves instead of the Ozzy tour when it got cancelled this year. But sometimes it's just not that easy to do that. They might prefer to go out with Ozzy on a bigger package. But in terms of the sentiment of what you're saying, I definitely want to see Firepower get a proper tour and a proper airing, because that album is fucking unbelievable.
I like that album too.
Hooray. We've got someone sent us a riddle.
I was just reading this.
Someone from, read this. This is amazing. Tina. You have to read it, but you have to read it in the Tina. Style of a mystic sage from Dungeons and Dragons or something like that.
Do you want to go, Alex? Alex? Alice.
How dare you?
Weird. It's Malice, mate.
I know, Malice. I'm confused. Malice, I think you're the most mystical because he works in a crystal shop.
Okay. A box without hinges, key or lid, yet golden treasure inside is hid.
Shit grammar, isn't it?
Yeah.
Does anyone know? I'm no good at these. I'm terrible at these.
I cheated and I Googled it.
Oh, you didn't? That's awful. Well, you can't do it then. Right.
Well,
Alice.
Basically, I've got no patience and I was trying to think of what it might be and I had some ideas and I wanted to Google it and see if it was right.
Do you think, is it guessable? When you saw it, were you like, oh, or was it really stupid?
I wouldn't have guessed it.
Box without hinges, key. What's golden treasure, I mean?
That was the bit that was hard that I wouldn't have guessed. So you have to think a bit more obscure. Like, golden treasure doesn't necessarily mean like coins.
No, I know
or
that.
Gold bars. And I know, and that's why riddles are so riddly. But
is it,
does it have to be golden colour? I mean,
well, hang on a minute. You just told me off for Googling it, so you can't ask me these questions. You've got to solve the riddle yourself.
Okay. Is it the sky?
No.
Thought it could be because the sky could be like a box but without lids, and the treasure could be the sun. That was my thinking.
No, it's not. Do you want a clue?
Yeah.
Well, do you want to ask a question and I'll tell you?
Oh, mate. Is it something you find in nature?
Yeah.
Golden treasure. Is it... Oh, fuck it. I really want to work it out.
Ask me some more questions. I'll give you some
questions. Is it underground?
Is it where?
Underground.
No.
Is it in the sky? It's not, is it? Because I just guessed that.
No.
Is it in woods?
Could be.
Oh, what?
But it could be. It could be. That's all I can say. Maybe she has some more generic questions.
Is it an
questions.
Egg?
Yeah.
Yes! Fucking come on!
How did you know that?
Because how is it a box?
I don't know.
How the hell is that a box?
How did you guess egg?
Because when you said it could be, I thought of, for some reason I thought of a tree, and then I thought of a nest, and then I thought of an egg in a little nest.
And also because you know yes! that I like chickens.
Yes! Come on!
But it's not a box.
So apparently,
because it's an egg yolk. Yeah,
I disagree with this.
This is one of
I don't because I got it right. apparently, so happy.
Apparently this is one of Bilbo's riddles for Gollum.
Bilbo sucks.
I should have guessed it then, yeah. Shouldn't I?
Bilbo yeah, sucks at riddles. This is crap.
No, he does.
It's
he
not a box.
He makes them up.
he shouldn't.
He panics.
Yeah, I didn't get egg from that either.
I should have got that. I've read The Hobbit a bazillion times.
I was thinking like too literally. I was thinking of like golden treasure and what no, treasure but like is.
I was thinking of like stuff that could be golden treasure, but like that's not a box. An egg isn't a box.
Well, a box is a container, right?
Yeah, it's a container.
No, a box is a box shape.
You're thinking what's of box a square shapes? Or a rectangle.
It's a cube. That's a box.
A cube can be a box can be a rectangle as well, which is not a cube.
Yeah, but it's cuboid shape.
You think so?
What about yes. Well, hold on. What does a
what about a round box? If you had like a jewelry box that was in an egg shape.
An egg is spherical and it has
it's
no
not spherical. It's like technically
I'd say it's egg shaped.
Yeah, but it's all rounded. It. Like it's rounded completely.
But if you had a box in the shape of an egg to store something in it, you wouldn't say it wasn't a box.
It's got you there. I think it is.
I don't think it's a riddle, good riddle.
As the riddle master in the room, I think it's completely fair. And I, by the way, I have read The Hobbit a lot, but I genuinely didn't think of it when that came out. I forgot.
I also like how you
if you said, what have I got in my pocket? I would have known it was The Hobbit.
I like the fact that you're really proud that you just called yourself the Riddle Master.
Yeah.
And that you're proud that that's your new name.
Riddle Master!
Like you're introducing yourself to somebody and be like, I'm the Riddle Master.
I am. That's how I'm introducing myself on the podcast forevermore.
Okay, you can bring a riddle next week. Riddle
yeah,
Master.
Riddle Master.
No.
Riddle Master on us.
Oh, I've we'll got one. I've it. Got one. What has 4 legs in the morning, 2 legs at noon, and 3 legs in the evening?
A man.
A chair that's broken.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Did you know that one already?
Yeah.
It's quite a famous one. Did you get it, Al?
No.
Because when you're a baby, you're crawling on all fours, and yeah. Then you're walking on 2 legs, and then you have a little walking stick when you're old. So you get 3 legs.
Okay.
Forget it then.
But you might not have a walking stick.
And you might not be a riddle master, but I am, so deal with it. Next week... Oh, God. Next week on the Metal Hammer podcast... Elle is insisting that she goes to see... everyone's probably forgotten. If you all remember Threatin, that mischievous viral hit that kind of took the internet
Jared
by storm last
Threatin,
year.
The singer of...
Starring Jared Threatin. Elle is going to see Threatin in London this Friday on the 1 year anniversary of the original planned gig that kicked off this whole cacophony of nonsense.
This Threatin extravaganza.
So Elle is going to go watch Threatin and is going to be reporting it for 30 seconds and no longer next week.
I'm going to do we'll give her a bit longer than that.
No, you have to do a 30 second one, like you know this 30 second YouTube reviews or whatever, and you've got to do it really really fast like this.
Yeah. Into it. So that'll be next week.
Band without an audience. You've tried to fabricate one using social media and stunts.
And who knows how many fans they might have now.
It was a riddle.
Oh.
The answer's Threatin.
Don't try it, mate. That's it for this week, though. Tune in next week for that and a whole lot more besides. Have a wonderful Halloween, everyone. Trick or treat respectfully.
Happy Halloween. Happy Halloween.